Welcome back, everybody. We can get seated. I hope you enjoyed the coffee, pastries, and cupcakes provided by Eutelsat. There was no mistaking my cupcake was from Eutelsat. We're now going to proceed to our second roundtable discussion of the symposium. In this roundtable, we ask the question, how can HBTV help broadcasters better compete within a global marketplace with the emergence of global players such as Netflix and Amazon? To moderate this roundtable, we've invited back Jon Kreuger, who we had up here yesterday, but we've invited him back to lead the discussion. So Jon, you can take over from this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew, for the introduction, and welcome back from the coffee break. We've got a very interesting topic to discuss this morning. It's a round table, so it'll be very interactive, and you're also very much invited to contribute and post questions through the Slido system. Also, there'll be a roving microphone, and we will have a poll for you later on as well. So you're all involved, and I hope you're at full strength again after the coffee break. Now, the round table is titled, How Can HBTV Help Broadcasters Better Compete Within the Global Marketplace? Of course, we've already had it this morning, we've had it yesterday. Everybody is talking about Netflix and Amazon, so are we. And the global players, as we've heard, are really affecting the local markets and the local players. We will discuss the impact that the new global VOD players have on the local market, the local broadcasters. We will see how the local players address this new competition and how HBTV can be used to better compete. Welcome to the stage Arturo Larraz-Iranier, Strategy Director of Atres Media. Atres Media, welcome.
Hi.
Is one of the biggest players, commercial players in the Spanish market, a bit of the RTL or ProSiebenSat.1 of Germany. Same with my next guest, Thomas Follin, Deputy Managing Director in charge of new media channels at M6, big French commercial broadcaster and part of the RTL Group. Welcome.
Thank you.
Stephanie Lüdecke, Managing Director of ProSiebenSat.1 Digital. I've already mentioned them, big commercial player in Germany. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you.
And my last guest is Simon Hunt, Director of Business Development and Strategy of Digital UK. Welcome to the stage. And for all who don't know it, Digital UK is the association supporting Freeview. Freeview, the big DTT player in the UK. Please take a seat.
Okay, here?
Wherever you like.
Okay.
Now, I've already mentioned the impact global players like Netflix or Amazon have on the local market. So I would very much like to start with that to get a general impression of the current situation. Of course, big keywords in that sense are on-demand viewing and OTT. Let's start with you, Arturo. How has the market been in Spain? And how have the national players, including your company, reacted to that change?
You mean the change in the market, in the environment, in the general environment, how these OTT developments are?
Yes. Yes. So, what's your reaction to Netflix?
Okay. The truth is that in the Spanish market, Netflix has like 1.5 million subscribers, and the growth of Netflix it has been really high in the last years. If you think about Spain, was one of the latest markets that they arrived. So. In the very beginning, we were quite we have our doubts in terms of if they will success or not in Spain, and they have actually did it. They have done it, and I think that the impact of this Netflix or HBO, they have three big impacts. The first one is that they challenge the linear viewing, and we are feeling the pressure on linear viewing, and I'm sure that all of you will agree on that. They challenge the not just in that way, but in a lot of ways the patterns of TV consumption. So force us to the broadcasters to push more, to put more pressure on adapting to this convergence of digital convergence. And another big effect is that they are taking brand attribution of our content in their platforms. So when you have this trade-off that you have to balance about if compete with them or collaborate with them, the thing is that if you collaborate with them on your local market, you feel that the brand attribution of your content in their platforms is totally goes for them. So that's a big challenge. And then you start seeing there as collaborators, but then you realize that you are competing with them also. So
friends and enemies at the same time, and competition obviously on several levels, yeah. As we've heard. I believe, Thomas, it's the same in France.
Yeah, it's the same in France. In France, we have a myriad of AdWords services, but you need to imagine that Netflix plus Amazon represent more than 90% of the consumption there. So that's they're really dominant in this field. Today, Netflix is 4 million subscribers in France. It's 3 accounts per subscription, so it's 12 million people watching Netflix. So it's getting very, very fast. We have a specificity in France with the distributors, with the triple play, because very early in the French market, when you wanted to have internet, you had to internet provider come to your house and just put their TV set under your TV set. So what happened is that it's very difficult to go OTT in France on the TV set. It's the distributors is a real getaway, real getaway for that.
Then you mean the gatekeeper?
Yes, you know, this is really the gatekeeper on the
telcos.
TV set.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like Orange and so
exactly,
on.
Orange, SFR. Yeah. So when Netflix tried to come to the market, they first go OTT TV and they just failed. So what they had to do is they had to partner with Orange, with SFR, with the distributors in the market to penetrate. And what happened is that now they are accelerating a lot in France with the numbers I've just told you.
Yeah, well, that's what we see in lots of markets. Sky in Germany and Austria just announced an alliance with Netflix to put Netflix as an app on their Sky Q box. The same has already happened in the UK. So I think we'll see more of this happening, that the new OTT players associate themselves with the classic traditional pay TV and telco operators to gain more visibility, more viewers, and obviously also make it easier for their customers to access them. Stephanie, I believe in Germany it's been pretty similar. Could you give us a quick detail on the market situation and the impact that the new VOD players have had, and perhaps also looking into the future, how you try to face that new challenge and what you've prepared for that?
At first, we won a few new big advertisers in our market, so this is pretty good information. and of course, it's always critical if a competitor enter your market and just grab, especially for the younger target groups, heavy reach from you and just try to push you out of this target group. On the other hand, as long as you don't have serious competitors, you will not develop as a broadcaster. So, and I think that is what happened for years in our market. So we were very much just in our own field, heavy with reach, in a very comfortable situation. And now we are in the situation really to push ourselves forward, especially if we look into what kind of technology should we use, what kind of user experience is now relevant for the younger target group. And therefore, we could learn quite a lot from these new players. So I take that as a positive challenge to us. And of course, and maybe you've heard about that also ProSieben is jumping into that market by building its own VOD player with 7TV. And what we have learned and have to learn very, very fast is not to do just our own thing and be focusing on our own contents. It's very much just to open up the field to start a big collaboration in our markets, just to give everybody in the market the chance to participate in these new platforms. Because it's not a play against one broadcaster against the other. It's more about finding a way for local players to compete against global players. And we learned very much that from a local perspective, we have to concentrate ourselves where our strengths are. They are very much within the local content. And if you look into ProSieben, we have to be critical on ourselves that for quite a while we focused ourselves very much on American and US content. And we have to refocus ourselves in a dedicated part on our local activities. And this is what we will do over the next few times.
Right, so you haven't just reacted, you've also acted with reference to 7TV, and there are initiatives like that in other countries, and we're going to have that later on as a key point of the discussion. Simon, can you explain on the situation in the UK market, how have these big players impacted the local players, and what have you done looking forward?
Mm-hmm. So the over-the-top service has been very successful in the UK. Netflix has been in the market for some time and on pay TV platforms for some time, on Virgin since 2010, in fact. And we see them very, very much more of a friend than an enemy. And there's a number of reasons for that. It's important for us to succeed if people continue to watch TV on their TV and don't plug a Chromecast or a Roku stick into the side of the TV, because we know that television viewing is very resilient. People like the TV guide, and they come to our content. But people are seeking to top up on some premium TV, and Netflix and Amazon and Now TV do that really, really well, in a way that is actually very beneficial to us, because it means that somebody is much more likely to do their content discovery using a TV remote control, rather than have a sort of mixed economy. And that's very beneficial to us because it brings people to our content. And even in homes with high take-up of Netflix and Amazon, you would still see most people most of the time consuming TV from the major broadcasters, from the public service broadcasters, and the very many multi-channel commercial broadcasters on the Freeview platform. So we see we see it as a bit of a catalyst to cord cutting, and we are a beneficiary of that. It's caused us to have to raise our game in user experience and content discovery. So the consumer has benefited, manufacturers definitely benefit, and they have commercial agreements with the SVOD players, which are beneficial to the industry as a whole. So we are very favorable.
I think that's probably something that every player from, let's say, the old world has learned. They aren't alone anymore in this market. There are new players, and those new players drive competition and they push you. And that means actually in the end you'll have to increase or improve user experience, and you'll have to try to include the non-linear services, the non-linear world, into the old linear world. And I think that's where HBB TV comes into the picture, because it could act like a bridge. Mm-hmm. Combining those two worlds, and the main thing is you don't need an app for that, so you don't need to go into the OTT world and then have viewers installing an app trying to make sure they've got the newest version of the app and all of that. Just by pressing the red button, you're instantly in this interactive on-demand world. Stephanie, you've probably been one of the broadcasters that's been experimenting with HBB for the longest. Can you perhaps quickly explain on since when you've decided to use HBB TV, why you've decided to use HBB TV, when was that? A couple of years ago, I think, and what were the first experiences you've made in this back then very early market?
Yeah, I think in our company we started more than 4 years ago by experimenting on the HBB TV, very much driven by just taking care on what happens to the market, what are the opportunities of the new technology. And our first idea, it was very much an own portal idea, so to have an own platform by just grabbing these linear consumers and pushing them into this new platform and hold them as long as we could in this area. And that was slightly successful, but what we have seen is that the linear consumers sometimes were not that happy by just pushing away from the linear content, because they had not the interest just to decide for the one or the other. Sometimes we felt that we totally forgot the consumer situation where they are. And when you enter a linear channel, your idea is you want to use linear content. But in that situation, we found three different opportunities why a consumer might be interested in Red Button Portal. The first situation for a consumer is that he is just waiting for something. So started too early with Linear and is just waiting for a loved movie. And in that situation, the consumer don't want to go just away from Linear. We offer now a dual situation where on the one hand you see the linear picture and you can follow whatever happens. And next to it, we open a feed in the first screen and just to deliver an opportunity with snackable content. So where you just choose piece by piece for a few seconds or a few minutes. And this is a situation which is pretty successful right now. We started that initiative in summer this year, and we could double our connection with the consumers during that time. So the engagement is really increasing heavily, and we offer their news and little snippets with videos and some extra services in addition to the linear content. That was the first user situation which we found out. The second one is the classical one, that the consumer is searching for an alternative because the linear is not delivering what he or she is expecting. And therefore, I think we have well-prepared libraries, and what we found out for us, it's not enough just to focus ourselves on our own content. We collaborate with other media houses, especially the ones who don't have access to the TV consumers right now. So we have a very good collaboration here in Berlin with Welt, so we have some news extra contents, which is a super heavy-use channel. We have a cooperation with Bunte, and so we try to bring other medias in place and just have good cooperation and offer some contents which you don't have a chance to find right now in the linear TV. And the same we will offer to some branded guys, so to just give them the opportunity to be directly in touch with our consumers. And the third use case for us is the situation that the user want to participate in our program and be part of it. And we offer them several chances to interact directly with the program, with voting or with quizzes or whatever might be the opportunity in the program. And this is what we have learned so far, and we really could increase this engagement with the consumer. What we are missing right now, and this is a little bit a hassle with HBB TV, if we just look into the development of our reach. So it is on a good level. It's okay for us right now. But if we see that we have 36 households and we want to really reach everybody, this is the hard story right now. Because if I just see how protective the hardware industry is right now and not supporting HBB in the way we would love to do that, the same with the telecommunication providers, it's a hard discussion right now. And we are open as broadcaster for collaborate with them, to open our markets for them, give them opportunities to participate, but we all are in one boat with the technology and we are dependent on each other. So, and as broadcaster, we do on a product perspective everything what is needed to attract the consumer, we need more help for them.
That's an interesting aspect because, of course, in order for any service offered on HBB TV to reach the viewer, you need to collaborate with the platform operators, because they carry your signal. And we do have the case in Germany, and we'll probably hear from the other markets now, that platform operators, like a cable operator, blocks the HBB TV signal because they want to set up their own business models using the proprietary user interfaces. How's the situation like in Spain? Do you have that case where a platform operator blocks the HBB TV signal so that they can do their own business with something else?
You mean the telcos? The truth is that they actually do it. We only have one telco that connect directly the DTT signal and you can put the HBBT signal.
So it's not blocked.
The rest,
right?
Yes, but the other ones are just blocking HBBTV.
They're blocking it.
Yeah.
All right. I think yesterday we learned from the figures regarding the infrastructures that Spain is very much a DTT market.
Yeah.
And that's where the
we are lucky. We are lucky because the pay TV in the Spanish market is not high. So, yeah. The penetration is not high. So what we are focusing mainly is to try to go to the rest of the market that is not inside the platform.
So in DTT, obviously the HPP signal is present because there's no platform operator in the middle. I think it's totally different in France, probably, where you've just talked about this dominance of the telcos,
yes.
And they decide as the gatekeepers what they let through and what they don't let through. So what can you explain on the situation in France?
Exactly. So in France, they really want to keep all this business of interaction with the TV viewers. So for us, it's very difficult. It's mostly impossible to have a direct relationship with our TV viewers. But in this new world, it's impossible for a broadcaster to innovate, to meet the consumer need, to face this competition of Netflix and all these others who are making some tailor-made services if you don't have access to this data. So that is very important for us to be able to play with this linear signal. As you said, this is HBB TV is the native bridge for non-linear. Today we have, as a broadcaster, we have millions and millions of people coming every day on our live signals. This is the best way to leverage our business to convert into non-linear. But we need to have to be free to do that, which is not the case in France. So we are we want absolutely the government, and I think it should be a European initiative, to make HBB TV a normative HBB TV setup compulsory on every devices for manufacturers and for distributors also.
Right. Well, that's
absolutely key for us.
Interesting.
If we want
point.
To have this free direct relationship with the TV viewers.
Because on one level we've got the platform operators that may or may not let the HBB TV signals go through, and on the other hand we've got the telcos who control their own hardware that they give to the consumers, to their clients. And obviously, if HBB TV is not part of the receiver, of the set-top box that's issued by the cable operator, then you know all your ambitions just dilute. They don't reach the viewer. That is a very big problem. And this leads us to the poll I've mentioned earlier on the Slido system. If you take a minute and have a look at that, the question is whether, in your opinion, the government or regulatory instance should interfere and make HBB TV compulsory on set-top boxes, TV sets, reception devices, let's put it this way, or whether the market should regulate itself. So we'll have a look at the results in a minute. I'll take the time to ask Simon, the situation in the UK. Do you have a problem with platform operators blocking the HBB TV signal and perhaps telcos that issue set-top boxes without HBB TV because they want to have their own system and business models?
Yeah, there are two telcos in the UK that use DTT as part of their hybrid pay TV platform, and they are not HBB TV compliant receivers. So our content partners have to do separate deals with them in order to get their VOD services on those on TalkTalk and BT, and they do that effectively. And the public service broadcasters are shareholders in that as a vehicle, so they do have good influence. It doesn't feel like there's any regulatory intervention required for that. The market seems to be operating quite effectively. Where we're altogether more successful is in the horizontal market. So if you buy a television or a free-to-view set-top box, they are all HBB TV, with the exception of Samsung, who's not our partner. And that's proving very, very effective in creating an environment where the broadcasters have a largely unmediated access to their viewers with HBB TV for interactive services, for data, eventually for targeted advertising. So I think the market works well, and because of the success of manufacturers' TV sales, eventually it will be the largest market by far, and we will sit alongside the pay TV operators, be them cable or satellite or IPTV.
Right, so it's looking fairly good in the UK.
I
think that brings us to one of the main benefits of HBB TV that I don't need to tell you about, but just it makes sense in this context to mention it, that as a player wanting to offer HBB TV services, you benefit from large installed base of devices, no matter what manufacturers we're talking about, that can handle the system according to the specifications. And so you don't need to deal with Android, Apple, all the proprietary systems from smart TV manufacturers. And you don't need to constantly update the apps and make sure that they're all in line with the current version. It's just one standard, and that's HBB TV. And that leads us to a point that was raised earlier on, the new initiatives by national players to join forces to combat this challenge from big American players. And we've got the interesting situation now that in the old days, because we were talking about the old days when you were just the national players, there was competition between all of you, the public broadcasters, the commercial broadcasters, the commercial broadcasters between each other and so on. And now in many key European countries, we see initiatives of alliances being formed between former competitors, joining forces to develop new platforms that comprise linear and non-linear services. And all of them, as far as I've learned, use HBB TV as their technical infrastructure. And obviously one of the reasons is because they can instantly reach this great population of hardware devices. And we've heard about the Loves TV initiative in Spain yesterday. So thankfully we've got one of the members of this alliance on the stage. Arturo, can you explain a bit on the ambition of Loves TV, who's behind it, and what you want to do, and of course why you've chosen HBB TV?
I think regarding all the this new situation that we are seeing this year, that is that the broadcasters are getting together to join forces.
So who's part of Loves TV?
Loves TV is driven by the Atres Media, Mediaset, and the public broadcaster, that is RTVE.
So the major players.
The three main three players of the
I think they combine about 70% of the audience.
Yeah. But it's open to the rest. We have to
It's an open platform.
It's an open platform. Obviously, there has to be, if you want to carry out a project, there has to be someone to lead it. And in this case, it's led by three main players. But one of our big aims is to be open to the rest of the national and regional players. Mm-hmm. And also, right now we are just in a few weeks we are going to officially launch it. We decided to start with HBB TV technology. So what Loves TV is quite simple. What it aims to be is just a liquid brand that is Loves that represent an access to the free-to-air content, not depending on the channel of distribution, you know. And we have started with HBB TV because it makes a lot of sense to start in your main channel of distribution, which is DTT, mainly DTT in Spain. And we said, okay, we can start with DTT, start building the brand, and say, okay, the people will.
HBB 1.5.
It's working on 1.5 because we have this need for a scale. Mm. And this is something that is an issue to address, you know, because if you need a scale, the truth is that you have to go to a standard that is lower in terms of possibilities than the one that you can do. So right now, there's a big trade-off if you want to look for reach or if you want to look for new features. So I think that Thomas said, and it's a good point, that we have to standardize, and it's something that, in my opinion, the best way would be by a normative way.
Yeah.
And European, because as you can see, there are four different markets, and the market situation is really different in each one. So there has to be some standard, and HBB TV is a technology, and technology is the maximum.
Forming a standard and an alliance. I think these are the two points that we can say these are, despite all differences, the similarities of the market or the reactions to the market by the global players. Leading to France, you've got something similar over there. I mean, while in Spain you're almost ready to launch the regular service, and France is a bit further away, but you've decided to join forces. So, Thomas, could you quickly explain on the so-called Salto initiative in France, who's behind it, what the ambitions are, and why you've chosen HBB TV?
Okay. So, as I said, in France, we are in between Netflix, Amazon, and the distributors who want to be the gatekeeper of the TV viewers. So we needed to alliance with the other broadcasters in France, TF1 and France Télévisions. So the three of us represent 70%, the same of the audience share. And so we decided to alliance to be an alternative to the distributor to access to the end consumer, and of course to be able to compete with Netflix and Amazon. The three of us represent 3 billion euro of program spending altogether per year. So we have arguments to compete there. And one of the area where there is no competition is the HBB TV, because this is where, as broadcasters, as I said, we have a big leverage on the strong promotion we are able to do. So every day, these millions of people coming to our signals, we need to convert them into one experience, which will be Salto. Salto today, we expect the green light of the antitrust authority to be able to launch this service.
Right, talking about Germany, it's not the first time that something like that has been tried to set up. We've had projects both from the public broadcasters and the commercial broadcasters. We might remember Amazonas as a project from the commercial broadcasters, RTL and ProSiebenSat.1, and the Germany's Gold project set up by ARD and ZDF. Both of them were blocked by the German antitrust authority. But that was years ago, and the market has changed now. Now we're seeing new initiatives, and of course one of the biggest ones, and it's just gained weight, is the initiative by ProSiebenSat.1 and Discovery. It's building on the current platform called 7TV, but obviously it's going to get a new name when it launches, I think,
summer next year.
And as I said, it's gained weight quite considerably, because yesterday it was announced that German public broadcaster ZDF is going to join this alliance with their initially linear channel, so they'll be included into 7TV probably in a month or so, I think. And Stephanie, could you please explain on the ambitions you've got with the new project with Discovery and other players? Other players have joined you. Axel Springer, you mentioned, with Welt, the newspaper, and the TV news channel and the documentary channel. And you've got Constantin Medien with sports channel Sport One on board. So you've got big players, public players, commercial players, and small players already on board. So what are your ambitions with this platform? Do you want to create really the German, let's say, Hulu, to take the American brand name?
Yeah. So this is very much what we announced to the market so far, and this is exactly the ambition which we have. We want to open our platform for all relevant media players, broadcasters, everybody who has interesting content and want to show that to our consumers is invited to be part of that platform. Because we see this game is not any longer to win by just focusing on ourselves. So I think this is really gone. Also, the global business is just gone. And so that therefore, we accepted the challenge that we have to develop a local market, collaborate with other European markets just to push ourselves into the direction, but focus right now on our market and be open for everybody who can deliver interesting stuff to consumers. So, and we are willing to share as well revenues, reach, user experience, because we really want to build up an open platform.
And where does HBB TV come into the game?
Right now, our focus is to be more part of mobile and web, so classic stuff. But in addition, we develop right now also HBB activities.
For smart TV, I guess.
For smart TV. We have the big advantage that ProSieben was pretty early in that market, that we have already quite a lot of experience how to deal with the technology, with the different tech players in that game. And we will definitely have the situation that, I don't know, in 1 year time from now or so, We will open up all our broadcaster channels for the 7TV or the new product library to push that from all our channels, really to make sure that we can deliver enough reach, be attractive enough to our consumers that they can find us regardless where they are. So our idea is to have these 360-degree strategy wherever our consumer is, what kind of device he would ever use, our product is there in the best kind of technology.
Right. Simon, regarding the UK, I believe there's been an effort called Kangaroo, but it didn't really
leap anywhere.
So what's the current market like? Is there like this big central platform already, or is it being prepared?
There's a great deal of collaboration between public service broadcasters, and that's been the case since the early 2000s. And Freeview was formed as a response to pay TV, effectively, at the time. Freeview Play was formed as a response to the emerging competition from the west coast of America, and we're owned by the main public service broadcasters, by BBC, ITV, Channel 4, but also by Arqiva, who own and operate the digital terrestrial network. So we are there to serve the interests of the digital terrestrial broadcasters, if you like, and we run the platform on that basis. And we have taken the same approach to Freeview Play, our hybrid TV implementation. But we have taken quite a different approach to most people here, because we have seen that as something that can only be successful if we collaborate with the manufacturers. It has to be a solution which is successful for them.
Do you think that there'll be a situation in the UK in a few years where you see the big operators unite, like, let's say, TV Now from Sky, the BBC iPlayer, and your Freeview Player to, you know, team up and form a joint platform to make it easier for viewers to access the content?
Well, we've done that through standards, and that's been very successful, but everybody's operating their own applications.
So you need to keep switching between the apps, and that's what all the other players try to avoid?
Actually, that's not the experience that most people would see. So the approach we've taken to the platform is that you can, of course, discover the catch-up content through individual players. You know, BBC iPlayer and ITV Hub are famous enough to be destinations in their own right. But a lot of the consumption is actually driven by the UIs that are owned and run by the TV manufacturers. So the EPG is the most obvious one of those. You can discover that, you know, the catch-up TV in the TV guide itself by going back in time. And in the BBC's case, you can restart the current show. We're also integrated into the search and recommendations of each of the TV manufacturers. So if people want to find the name of a show or look for recommendations, those are presented in the native UIs of LG or Sony or Dell TVs.
So this leads us back to the manufacturers, and
so they're using our platform and they're using our APIs and our metadata aggregation and distribution system. But what the customer sees is they see LG. And they think of it, well, this is telly, this is how Freeview works. So it's not dependent on having to go into, you know, if I'm going to, you know, catch up with what's on the BBC, or I can't find anything there, I'm going to catch up with what's on ITV. It is actually an aggregated experience, which, of course, is what that was the benefit and remains the benefit of the TV channel lineup.
So one could say it's a platform. Well, aggregator, one could say it's a gatekeeper. So I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But anyway, regarding gatekeepers, we've got the poll. And so I'll quickly ask the technicians to put that on the wall to see the result of our poll. Wow, that is quite a clear response.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And Thomas was the one who initiated that. So what... You've got the right to first comment on it.
You can lead the you can lead this project.
You're happy with that?
I'm very happy with that, because we can see that all these new players in the market are playing with arms that we don't have. They are global. We're coming from broadcast, and broadcast is a really TV, national, local business. And we have these global actors coming in the market. They work around all the regulation constraints in our market. So we need to fight in our way. And this is we need this regulation from the government to help us to fight in this market. HBB TV is probably for the broadcasters today the best mean to address all these challenges we have.
Any other comments from the panel regarding the result of the poll?
I'm very surprised. It's not been necessary in the UK, and there are lots of competing platforms for interactivity, which is actually helping to drive competition in the market. I like having competition from Sky and from Virgin for what the TV experience is. I think that actually that helps me build a better product. It helps create incentives for our manufacturing partners for us to work together to innovate. The most important thing for us is the prominence of TV and a TV guide and the public service channels within that. And that's something that we are proving very successful of maintaining. Now, you know, people like Netflix are working very hard to turn TVs into monitors and, you know, to have buttons on remote controls that just get the TV UI out of the way. And there may be a case for intervention to make sure that local national channels retain their prominence.
Right.
Whether that needs to be a technology intervention, I'm less convinced.
Obviously, I mean, competition at the end of the day is about content, compelling user experience, user interfaces, and access, easy way to access the content. Any last minute comments?
Sometimes if you start this kind of communication, that maybe a law will come in place to help you supporting HBB TV, the market might be helpful enough to start this discussion with the different partners in the market and open up their mindset to invest more in collaboration instead of that law is needed to bring that in place.
That is, I think, a very good last word, but I don't want to miss the opportunity. If there's any urgent last minute question from the audience, to quickly grab a microphone, because otherwise we would continue with the next session. Thank you very much to the panelists for this most interesting discussion. And I think the benefits of competition are that they drive the business development, and that's at the end of the day what we all want to do and grow the business in the interest of the industry and the viewer. Thank you very much. And now over to Karin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much to Jörn and to the panelists.
Thank you.
You find your way down.
Thank you.
Or you can also, there is also a staircase on the other side, in case you want to leave. So maybe that those people were less passionate about it, didn't participate in the poll. So maybe we could have another result in 10 minutes after we discuss this. But we are now going to turn to the exciting future of HBB TV in the next session. What is cooking in the HBB TV labs? And who else would be better suited to moderate that next panel than Klaus Merkel, who is also known as Mr. HBB TV at the German TV platform, where he represents the IRT. He has been deeply involved in the launching phase of HBB TV in 2009, and he still participates very actively in the development of HBB TV standards, but also in the going to market and counseling of many broadcasters and other application and service providers. And that's why I'm going to call Klaus Merkel to come on stage and to present the next panel. Thank you very much. Give him a warm welcome. He's senior engineer within IRT.
Yeah, thank you very much, Karin, and hello, everybody. So, in fact, HBB TV is not as a technical standard, as a technical system, is not predefining any concrete form of service, but rather HBB TV is really a big and interesting and flexible toolbox. And with the advent of HBB TV 2, this toolbox grows significantly. So in the HBB TV community, there is really a good number of labs looking into that toolbox and thinking about new forms of services which can be created using this toolbox, new forms of interaction, new forms of interacting between broadcast, broadband, and those labs are not only thinking about this, but also active in prototyping stuff and active in promoting such new concepts into the markets. And as IoT, we are quite happy to be part of that lab community. I would now like to introduce the three speakers that we have to you, which is first Martin Prinz from Media Distillery in Amsterdam. Then we have Luai Basbus from Fraunhofer Focus, being senior project manager there, and also with technical background. So all three speakers in the session now have technical and engineering background, and the third speaker is Francesc Mas from CCMA, the public broadcaster in the public broadcaster in Catalonia in Spain, and they're also from the Research and Innovation Office or Department. So Martin will be the first with his contribution. So please, Martin.
Thank you, Klaus. So good afternoon, everyone. Schön hier zu sein. It's really nice to be here in this afternoon of the second day. Before I will dive into my presentation, let me see if the... Oh, that's a little bit too fast. Yeah, I just want to point you, if I'm correct, on Slido there's a poll. I'm not sure if it's running already right now. I will come back to this later on in the presentation, so hopefully you can provide you your input. So, basically, I'm working at Media Distillery. Media Distillery is a company where we develop artificial intelligence technology, and we do this to understand what video is about. So traditionally, video has been a black box. You cannot really know what's inside video. If you compare this to the web, in text, you can always search and find. And up until recently, video has just been something you cannot really address. You can write something about video, so create title, maybe create a synopsis, but you were never sure what's really inside video. So we're developing technology to make sure that we know what's inside video. And our goal as a company is to help people discover relevant content faster with an ultimate user experience. A little bit of a background for the company. So the company was founded in 2014 as a spin-out of TNO. So TNO is also a member of HBB TV. The company started in the media monitoring market, so really having a means for companies to monitor how often they appear in the news or on television. The company is funded by some venture capitalists. Currently, we have 25 full-time employees, of which 18 are developers. The majority is AI and machine learning developers. And yeah, currently we are expanding into the TV and operator market. Currently, we have Telenet in Belgium as our first customer with a product for start time corrections. But in the next year, yeah, I cannot really announce it already, but in the next year we will have many deployments with other operators and broadcasters across Europe, but also in Southern America. So that's really nice for a startup. It's almost lunch, so let's start with the media buffet. I think for consumers right now is a really excellent time to live. There's a lot of content to choose from. I think it was already addressed in the keynote yesterday from Sony. Some people even buy the same content from a different service because it's more convenient. So for a consumer, there's a lot to choose from, whether it's linear, whether it's HBB TV, whether it's YouTube, whether it's mobile. For consumers, it's always nice to have a lot of choice. So it means you can select what you want. And if there's something you don't like, you don't choose it, you choose something else. I think HBB has done some really nice things to cater to consumers, to help the consumers, to increase the choice, to increase the buffet. Several technologies, enabling video on demand, enabling start over TV, improving convenience, for instance, with the operator app where you might not need a set-top box anymore or you just need one remote. Making sure you can have the most immersive experience for TV with Ultra HD or HDR. better interaction by combining it with a second screen or a tablet, but also making sure users get more relevant ads. And I think relevant ads will help a user. A relevant ad means information to the user instead of something that annoys the user. But we also see in the market a lot of changes. We see a lot of technical companies, a lot of, primarily from the US. Those are not, most of them are not traditional broadcasting companies. They're technology companies creating media products. And what we see a lot is that these companies are raising the user experience bar. They're setting the new standards regarding what a user experience should be. An example is Netflix, which allows you to take your content everywhere if you download it, but also make sure you can skip content, enable binge watching, you can skip intros or skip outros. And I think this is really important for the younger generation growing up right now, millennials and even younger. Those people, they use these services and this is for them the standard. And then it's interesting for them if you compare this to traditional TV, sometimes they do not get the same user experience. So some of the frustrations we see, and this is what we see from our discussions with a lot of operators, but also with consumers, is people are really annoyed that when they record something and they want to watch it back, that the program does not start at the time it should start. So the EPG says it's 6 o'clock, but the program starts later. When I watch it, I am in the previous program, or I'm still in the ad break, or even worse, I'm already in the program. So it is really annoying for the user experience. Another thing is helping users search content. It regularly happens, I'm not saying with all broadcasters or operators, but there are several of them which use the same stock image for every episode from a certain season, which is really confusing to the user because the thumbnail does not give you a lot of useful information. Another thing that was already mentioned, search is really important, but we often also see that if the information someone is searching for is not in the title or in the metadata that was provided by the content provider, you will not find anything. And another thing already mentioned, people say, yeah, I like really like binge viewing, being able to skip intros, continue watching so that I can watch the entire season of House of Cards in one evening. And often this is not yet the case with operator and broadcaster products. So consumers may choose a different meal. If they don't like what they get, they might move away. And I think that is an important thing to consider, is if there's a lot of choice and people don't like or they're frustrated with the service, they will move to different services. So technicians, could you put up the Slido sheet? Is that possible? I just want to see what the audience thinks about the frustrations for users. So you recognize some of the things I mentioned. That's good, at least also for us. So bad recommendations is really a key issue. Finding relevant content, streaming. The other ones are not mentioned yet. So could you move back to the presentation? So coming back to the metadata, that's really important. Having the correct information allows you to do, for instance, do good recommendations or enable binge viewing. And as of, I think, up till a couple of years ago, creating this metadata has been a lot of manual work. In production, you need to create the metadata. It does not scale well. You need to do a lot of effort in this. And that's the reason why we don't always see a lot of qualitative metadata. It's just too much work. It costs too much money. And that's basically what AI can nowadays offer you. With AI and machine learning technologies, you can create a lot of the metadata automatically. And when you have this metadata automatically, you can use it for a lot of different purposes. And that's basically also what Media Distillery is doing. We have built a platform where we analyze live broadcasts, live video, or video on demand. And we try to extract or distill a lot of different information based on information that's already in the video. It could be speech, so we have speech-to-text recognition. It could be logos from brands or from companies. It could be faces from famous people. It could be the subtitle information. It could be the teletext if it's still available. We detect topics in the video, or we detect objects, and we can create the real start or stop times, or the start or stop times of ad breaks. And to show you a little bit of what this means, or what you can do with this, we have a video and that shows some of the things we can get out of a video.
Hello. The great racing drivers of the world have always had more capacity to understand what's going on around them.
It's almost like a serenity that no matter what's being thrown at them, they can handle it. They can go onto team radio, they can ask what's happening, they have an interest in what Fernando Alonso's doing, maybe three places behind them. It might be lap 22, but they're already thinking of what might happen on lap 61.
A world champion probably uses 70% of his capacity to drive the car, leaving 30 available to understand what's going on with the racetrack, with his own car, strategy.
So this video just gives you a little bit of an idea what kind of information is already in the assets you have available, which you already produce on a day-to-day basis. So if you compare this, normally you would have your EPG information, you have maybe some description about the Formula One. It's only about the entire asset. And what we can do, we can detect what is being said at a certain time. So we can only not only search the video, this is the video, but also which point in the video you should point to. So if a user is interested in a certain part, why not point him directly to that part and not to the entire video? And that brings me also about how can this be used in HBB TV? Based on this metadata, you can do a lot of interesting things for your customers. You can improve content discovery, like the recommendations, which already was mentioned. Right now is a big frustration. You can create binge markers to allow users to automatically skip content. You can create content snacks, snackable content, was already mentioned in the previous talk. It can be done automatically, and you can correct the start times. So there's a lot of things you can do to help the user get rid of frustration and make sure that the content you offer is for them is still valuable and they stay in your service. And with that, my time is up. Thank you. We have a booth outside, so please meet me and Peter if you have other questions, and maybe some questions will be also in the session. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Like this.
So, just this button, yeah. So, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Loai Baspos from Fraunhofer Focus, and I'm going today to present our 360 degree playout for HBTV. So if we can switch to the presentation. And I will first briefly present our technology and then present three live cases, or two of them were live and one is already a prototype. So this is the agenda. And I will start immediately with a brief introduction of the playout. So the idea is to bring 360-degree video to TV. And the motivation is that most or many broadcasters already produce 360-degree videos, and they use different distribution channels to bring these videos to customers. So they use, for example, native applications on mobile, for head-mounted displays, but also other distribution channels like YouTube and Facebook, but the TV is still missing. And what we do in this prototype or in our product is we try to bring the 360-degree video to the TV, but there are many challenges. So one challenge is if we are talking about HBTV, there are missing APIs to render the 360-degree video locally. We have also other challenges which are not necessarily limited related to HBTV, but to the TV in general, is processing capabilities on the TV. So this is also one challenge we need to overcome. And we need on TV higher quality. If we have 4K TV, so which means we have for one field of view is 4K, so we need higher quality content for the input 360-degree video. Also, when streaming a 360 video to the client, it's important to know that only 10% of the video is seen for the user. So you stream the whole video, but you see only 10%, so you have around 90% wasted bandwidth to stream the other content. So this is just an example. You can see here one 360-degree equirectangular frame, which is 24K. and you see one field of view, which is 4K. So in order to have one field of view in 4K resolution, you need an input video of 24K. So if you have input 4K video, you can produce field of view like for at maximum HD quality. So what we do is to solve all these challenges, or most of these challenges, is to render the video in the cloud. So we provide playout and processing of the video in the cloud. So we render from this input 360-degree video different field of views, different videos with some overlap. And we have two different types of video, one static video, so for each direction. And we have like moving videos to have like the animation between two different camera perspectives. So when we process the video, we can just upload it to any server and make it available through a CDN. And we use existing video codecs or well-supported video codecs like H.264. And this technology is already used by different broadcasters. So I will start with the first one from ERT during the FIFA World Cup this year in Russia. We already provided this for more than 180 videos. So for each game during the World Cup, we provided three videos. So I mean, the videos were available from FIFA, but we processed and made them available for HBTV. So the duration for each video was between 1 and 3 minutes. And this video were available for the TV. So I will switch to this video to show you how it works on the TV while I'm presenting. So you can see here, this is a broadcast channel, ERT. And this is the video portal. And you can see you can navigate to one of these 180 videos. And you can start the video and just use your remote control to interact with the video. So this was the first use case, live use case. We had during the World Cup for 1 month was available in Greece. And we had a very good results, specifically because Greece is a new country supporting HBTV. Yeah, as you can see in the video, but you can also see the demo later outside. So next use case is a new use case. It was on air until last week. It's provided by a German public broadcaster, VDR. The demo is, or the HBTV application is called A Day with Minor Andy. So the history behind this is the closing of last coal mines in North Rhine-Westphalia in Germany. So the application is already available for VR and VR glasses. And there are different episodes for around 7 or 8 episodes. And one of them is made available for HBTV using also the same technology. So here, just to tell you more about the techniques behind it, we use in this application devices that support MSE. So you may ask, MSE is not HBTV standard. We know this. But we saw that most new devices already support MSE. So we can tell that around 90% of new devices, I'm talking about only TV devices and not set-up boxes, already support MSE. So we did some whitelisting, and we did testing on devices, and we provided this product or this application. I will switch. And you can see this is a live application. This was without the teaser on the main application. You can see you can start the application from the launcher and start the video immediately from this launcher application and interact with the video using your remote control, just the arrow keys of the remote control. So this is a use case. It's basically a simple application integrating the 360-degree video provided for this. So in the last use case, which is part of an European project, which is provided also by RBB, German broadcaster, and it's about making interactivity in 360-degree video. So we saw in the first two use cases, we have 360-degree videos, and we have like remote control and arrow keys, and we can move around. But it's difficult sometimes to find the right content or the right field of view on the video. This is why, in this use case, we are focusing on putting more interaction in the content. So in this case, we have different 360-degree videos in the campus of RBB, and you can make a tour in the campus and switch from one video to the other video. So you have different hotspots in the video, and these are interactive. You can click on them and go to the next video and start it. So this concept will be transferred in the future to other pilot applications in different domains like music events and infotainment. You can also use different HBTV features like playing audio also on top of the application. As you can see here, if you enter the radio station, you can start the audio playback. So I think I'm on time. Thank you. I would also like to thank all the colleagues from ERT and VDR and RBB for providing materials for this presentation, and also for the extensive work during last weeks and months for making this 360-degree video play out live on TV. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Right. Now we go for Francesc, please, okay, for the last contribution.
Hi, everybody. I'm Francesc Mas, and I'm from the Engineering Innovation and Research Department in the CCMA. CCMA is the Catalan public broadcaster in Spain. And I wrote this title because I like it. That HBBTV is an excellent partner on the way of the innovation, because this is why HBBTV is for us. It's something that allow us to innovate and to improve our OTT contents, OTT services, sorry. Which is this one, I suppose.
The big okay. button.
So this is a brief resume about what we are going to talk now. On the first part, I wanted to talk about our new HBBTV application that we started last year, that it was specifically designed for the kids. It's the Super 3 channel. And the broadcast promotional video that we, the campaigns that we did for the promotion of this HBBTV application and channel. So you know that yesterday we won the awards of the channel. So I want to show you once more the video, the promotional video with subtitles, so you will understand what it says in Catalan.
De botons n'hi ha de totes les mides i colors. Però aquest és el botó vermell? Perdó, aquest és el botó vermell. Si tens una tele intel·ligent, però intel·ligent de debò, una tele connectada a internet, prepara't. Prem el botó vermell al comandament i podràs triar i remenar tot allò que vols veure del Super 3. Amb el botó vermell tens tot el Super 3 a les teves mans. Prem el botó vermell i que comenci l'espectacle.
Okay, so thanks to the campaign and the promotional video and all that we did to promote this new application, we could measure a big increase in audience on the consuming of kids content through online channels. So as you can see, this graphic starts on the July of last year. That was when we started this new application. Kids already could enjoy kids content through the only application for HBBTV that we had at this moment, that was for the entertainment channel. But once when we started this new application, you can see the green line grows up until now that we, in September this year, we can, just a moment, yes, we can, we have experimented an increase of 8 times the consuming of kids content on the HBBTV application. That means also a total increase of consume of content, kids content, of a 75% on online platforms. And specifically, if we talk about smart TVs or HBBTV, we can say that 55% of the online consume, kids consume, is now done through HBBTV. You can see the blue line also for the mobile application. Previously, kids used the mobile phone also to watch the Super 3 channel. I prefer, as a father, that my kids don't use the mobile phone. The mobile phone is for me. I prefer that they use the TV. It's a more healthy way of enjoying the contents. And on the website, if we have a look on the website, we can see that we also have a small increase in consuming. But the total, what is really important, is that the total consume augmented 75%. Okay, so then I wanted to talk also about the features of HBBTV 2.0, that, for example, the companion screen features allow us to innovate also. We are participating in two different European projects. One is called Immersive Accessibility on your left side, and the other is called EasyTV on your right side. Both European projects work towards the easy, the accessibility services, to easy the production of accessibility contents, to easy the way we interact with the devices to activate the accessibility services. On the EasyTV, we are working with the possibility to use the companion screen also to consume accessibility content. Like, for example, we could enjoy the audio description in our companion screen synchronously with the HBBTV in the way that we can consume this audio description and not disturbing the rest of the family. So just I will show you a small video that will explain this very well.
Services.
One of the main services of EasyTV platform is based on HBBTV technologies and the possibility that offer to synchronize video contents with second screen devices. This synchronization allows the user to access two different accessibility tools. Among these accessibility tools, we offer image enhancement based on customizable subtitles and sign language videos, and also the possibility of magnifying faces or in a specific area selected by the user.
And also,
we have the possibility of accessing to audio narratives with additional information. Finally, we offer the possibility of improvement of audio intelligibility with the most innovative techniques.
For more information, visit www.easytvproject.eu. Logos of the EasyTV partner.
Yep. Okay. So the idea is this, that for example, one of the options on the one of the use cases is that you can be consuming English subtitles on the HBBTV while consuming synchronously Spanish subtitles on the companion screen, for example. Then we are also working on companion screen features for synchronizing contents in the immersive accessibility project, that it's focused on the possibility to have adapted accessibility contents on the immersive wall, on the immersive 360 wall, and the way that we produce these new contents for this immersive world. In the same way, we are working on the possibility to enjoy 360 contents on the companion screen synchronously to the HBBTV, where we can enjoy the classical TV concert. For example, in this case, we have an opera concert that we already recorded in the Liceo in Barcelona, where we have a classical TV content that we watch on the TV, but at the same time we can enjoy 360 contents from 8 different points inside the theater, where we can watch in 360. And then we are also working on the login service and the way that we can recommend new contents. We already have content recommendation on our web services and for logged users, so users can log it, and then we know the profile of the users and we can better recommend the new contents for that users. On the next steps, we are working on to have this login service also on the HBB TV screens. And for the HBB TV 1.5, we still work with the possibility to log in from your companion screen using a QR. But of course, when we are working on HBB TV 2.0 features also, so this way we would not need to synchronize through a QR code to start this login on the HBB TV. We are also working on the recommend service also for not logged users, but then of course we would have less information. We would have no information about the profile of the user. For us, one of the main or one of the important points about recommendation is that we are a broadcaster. So as a broadcaster, we are not a video on demand platform. So we have information also about how users are consuming our linear TV. We know exactly what the user has seen and what the user has not seen, what the user prefers from our channels. No? So that's something to take that we must take in consideration when we recommend. We must take in consideration video on demand consumption, but also linear consumption. Oh, I'm sorry. OK, I see that I'm running out of time. This is a very interesting use case of what we can do with the information that we gather from the HBB TV. In this case, we needed to close one of our max MUX frequencies. We are a simulcast channel. We have TV3 channel that we do it in SD and HD at the same time, but we needed to close the second MUX, the second radio frequency. So we used HBB TV to monitor how this retuning of the TVs of our users was working. So I will jump this. This was only the promotion that we did for the users to inform them that they had to retune their TVs. Si no el veus automàticament, fes una cerca manual. And it was foreseen to stop this second mix on the 31st of May. But then we measured the quantity of TVs that already did the retuning, and the quantity and on the 31 of May, we measured that 30% of the TVs didn't do the retuning. So we keep the MUX one more week, and we wait in the way, and we go on, we went on broadcasting the video. So on the last week, we had a very big increase of TVs that did the retuning, and then we could close the MUX. So sorry for the time, really sorry. So the idea is the conclusions that HBB TV features, and especially HBB TV 2.0.1 new features will help us very much to improve, to innovate, to offer new services, and that the powerful tools that we can develop and with the data that we gather from the HBB TV services, it's very important, not only for audiences matters, but also for more for monitoring what is happening on the broadcasting side. Thank you very much, and sorry for the delay. Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Francesc. And this also makes very clear so the variety of approaches, the toolbox character of HBB TV, so you can really build different things and different services and make quite different use of it. So there are a number of questions via Slido, and I would like to start with Martin. One question sure. has been how live services, broadcast live services, would be integrated into that system.
So basically all the analysis, what we do, we can do it either at the broadcaster site or at an operator site. So we do this in real time. So when we detect something, we can expose the information after maybe 10, 15 seconds after we have detected something. So if you would tie this to HBBTV, you could use a mechanism like the stream events or something else to, if you want to provide this information to your client, you can push it in that way, or you use a different functionality. So you would leverage the broadband functionality of HBBTV to retrieve the data while you are broadcasting it.
Yeah. Who would be your typical customer of your system? Would it be really a number of single broadcaster rather, or would it be central aggregators or platform operators or EPG providers? So who would do this segmentation of content into?
It's a really interesting question, because the industry is really changing and the technology itself is neutral to the customer. So right now we already have deployments with operators, but we're also talking to broadcasters. And for my point of view, of course, you also talk about how would you use the content, who has the most information about the content. It would, of course, be a broadcaster, because probably it's his content. But aggregator, what was already mentioned yesterday and today, that in the Loves platform in Spain, or the German alternative, that's where broadcasters are combining it. And if you really want to say that, I think it's also from the poll that good content discovery, that's an issue. If you, as a broadcaster, would combine and aggregate it in such a platform, you would also have the same result. So it does not necessarily have to be an operator.
Yeah. So I think it would be better, it would be higher efficiency if you could have more, collect more input to your system and then do what you're doing on top of this. Yeah. Okay, thank you. So for Luai, so there are questions. One question would be, how many different video views do you have to render to get that experience, to pre-render?
Yeah, so basically, because our technology is about only streaming the field of view to the user, so we need to render a specific field of views in like step. It depends on the video, but in most cases, for the two use cases we had with FIFA case and with VDR, we rendered with a step of 45 degree. So which means you have around 8 static views in the video. And because we need also some sort of dynamic videos for left and right side, so it's like around 24 field of views we need. But these field of views are only like HD videos. So the input is 4K, but for the rendered content is 24 HD videos. But what you stream to the client is only one stream HD quality.
Mm-hmm. So one more technical question is, why don't you use canvas rendering? Have you looked at this as well? So you're using MSE, which is also not part of HBBTV. Yeah. So have you also looked on Canvas?
So I mean Canvas. So you can use Canvas, but you need also for a good performance, you need to use Canvas with WebGL layer. So it's not supported on all TVs. And even it's supported, the problem is not with the API on this level. The problem is the performance of TV devices for rendering the content. In this case, we need to stream the whole video and do the rendering on the client. And the client side processing will not work well on the TV. And this is the issue. For MSE, we use MSE only because we need to have a control on the buffer. If we have on the video player more control on the buffer, so we don't need to use MSE. So the reason for using MSE is only because we want to, when we switch the field of view, we need to remove the buffer and start playing from the new video. And this was the reason for using MSE.
Okay. So another question is whether the user can also move up and down the perspective and not just...
Yeah, it's possible. So it's the same idea. So you can render static views and you can render also dynamic views. So the dynamic views are like moving videos. So you can imagine the camera is moving all the time. So you can move the camera on the horizontal axis, but also on the vertical axis. So you can do this. In most cases, most interesting content is only on the horizontal axis, you then need to move up and down. but you can activate it. It depends on your configuration and your content. So, yeah, but this is possible, of course.
Okay, thank you. So, Francesc, so you have mentioned 360-degree video as well. And there is a question whether this can be used, or maybe you are already using that for live events?
Well, within the project iMac, we are not foreseen to do it in a live event, at least not in the first phase of the project. But we already have done 360 events, not on HBBTV, I'm sorry, but live events. And the question was...
Whether it will work also for live events. So.
Yes, it works, but it's what I wanted to say, but then... we still need a lot of processing, so we still have like a 1 minute delay when we do live 360 events. So, and 1 minute delay for a live content could be too much when you try to watch it at the same time on the TV.
Yeah, have you
for live events?
Thank you, Loael. So, have you thought about live?
Yes,
as well.
Definitely, we already have a pilot with German broadcaster for live event, live sport event. And I hope we'll go to live with this kind of 360 live streaming for TV, which makes sense for sport events, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is something which is also appreciated by the audience. So do you think will be a niche for the next year, or will be some bigger growth in this in 360 degree, maybe?
It will be another way of consuming content. Obviously, it will not kill the TV, classical way of watching. But I think, yes, it's not. It could be a niche of something more, but it for sure it will be very interesting. So the possibility to watch a sports event or to watch a concert in real time in 360 and to have this sensation of immersion with 360, not only 360 video and 3D, 3D 360 video, but also 3D audio, immersive audio, ambisonic audio. This will help very much to enjoy any kind of event, especially live events.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. You want to add
something? I want to add, like, for the 360 degree, it's important the way how you promote it on the TV. So we saw for the ERT case with the FIFA case. Or most of the views are in the game breaks between the two half times. So most of the viewers, so because they have time for like for 15 minutes and they can watch something on the TV, so they can start the 360 degree video. And one of the slides I show the statistics, and you saw the peaks are the half breaks in the games.
Okay, very interesting. So thank you very much, Luai, Martin, and Francesc. And we now, yeah, thank you.
So we now are going to break for lunch. We're going to be back here at 2 o'clock. Please take the time to visit the sponsor and exhibit stands outside while you're eating. Two things. The people who were in the two last panel sessions, if they could gather at the back when they've handed their microphones back for a quick picture, that would be much appreciated. And if you are interested in having a taxi booked, just outside the door here, there's a sign-up sheet, and you'll see there's a notice that a bit of a two-stage process you'll need to follow. But please look at the instructions. See you all back here at 2 o'clock. Thank you very much.